630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
Well, Taylor Hall held the lineup for the Buffalo Sabres. They are in a 2-2 tie with the New Jersey Devils after the first period. Also after one, Rangers up 4-1 on the Penguins. Panarin with his 12th, Zibanejad with his 13th, Ryan Strom with his 12th. Capitals and Islanders scoreless early in the first, early in the second period. Also early in the second period, Bruins up 2-0 in Philadelphia. Panthers leading the Hurricanes 1-0. Blue Jackets with a 1-0 edge on the Lightning, and late in the first in Detroit, the Wings and the Predators are scoreless. The Stars and the Blackhawks about to get underway, and the late game tonight doesn't start until 8:30. It is the Ducks and the Sharks. Raptors trailing the Lakers 34-20 with 2.5 minutes left in the first quarter. The Oilers in Ottawa tomorrow and Thursday. Remember that Friday game is now on Thursday. The Oilers don't play Friday. And now they're playing the game originally scheduled for May 7th on Saturday in Calgary. And that Oilers game tomorrow, it's that funny time. It is that funny time. 3 o'clock for the drop of the puck. So Bob Stauffer will have Oilers now from noon to 1:30. I'll jump on for the face-off show with Bob at 1:30, getting you ready for that 3 o'clock game as the Oilers try to go to 8-0 against the Senators. One of the many brilliant things I said before the season. Oh, there ain't going to be no team that sweeps another one. Well, it could happen. It could happen. If the Oilers win these two in Ottawa, they would go 9-0. We'll see. They still got to get there. They're going to have to play better than they did last night against the Montreal Canadiens, a team which seems to have the Oilers figured out a little bit, doesn't it? Looking at that top four in the North Division. And I see the Oilers really, they're going to finish second, third, or fourth. I think it's going to be near impossible to catch Toronto for first place at this point. I mean, who knows? I think Winnipeg probably has the best chance to actually track down Toronto, but I think it's going to be Toronto first. I think Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Montreal will be in some combination of two through four. And from what I have seen now this season, well, we saw the Oilers only win 3 games out of 9 against the Toronto Maple Leafs. We've seen them win only, what are we at now, 1 game out of 5 against the Montreal Canadiens. And also how they've lost those games. They have not generated very many scoring chances against the Canadiens. The games against the Leafs, there were the 3 lopsided games. The other 6 were actually pretty close. I mean, 3 of them went to overtime or were close in the third periods. But I still would give Toronto the edge in that matchup. The Oilers have, quite frankly, looked the best against Winnipeg. Now, they still play them 3 times. I have actually come to the conclusion, and you can always tell me if I'm crazy on the CertainTeed hotline, 780-496-0063, CertainTeed Professional Grade Building Materials. You don't even have to go on air. You can just call into Kellen, and when he picks up the phone, you can go, "He's crazy," and hang up. But I'm at the point where my least preferred playoff matchup for the Oilers would be the Montreal Canadiens, because they have a good defense. They have a couple of good goalies. I still don't look at them and say that they have a great forward core, but they have a deep and steady group of forwards. Going to be affected by losing Brendan Gallagher here for with the broken thumb, but Eric Staal is a nice addition for them. I now think that's the worst matchup for the Oilers is the Montreal Canadiens. I think the best matchup is the Jets. Now, those teams could maybe alter things at the trade deadline. You worry about health. You worry about momentum and peaking when you're going into the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. But from what I've now seen over how far into the season are we now? 3 months? I actually think the Oilers would have a better chance against the Leafs in a 7-game series than they would against the Canadiens. And they still wouldn't be favored, in my mind, because the Leafs are a darn good team. And Jack Campbell, the guy never loses. I mean, it looks like he's going to be their goalie, but just from what I've seen with the matchups. So anyway, something to keep in mind here as we move along, but it is the Oilers and the Senators tomorrow. Okay, Ken Holland, the GM of the team, an extensive interview with Bob Stauffer today, earlier today on Oilers Now. We're going to get to some of the highlights and look a little deeper into some of the things Holland said, because he did make, in my mind, several significant comments about the future of the team in the short term, mostly because the trade deadline is Monday at 1 o'clock Mountain Time. We'll have special coverage here on 630 Chet, starting with Bob on at 11 in the morning on Monday, going through his Oilers Now show. And Holland also made some comments about the longer term future of the team, specifically about some prospect players, and we'll get to that as well. But look, we all know it. The Oilers are up against the cap. They're technically over the cap, but they have guys on long-term injured reserve in Klefbom and Cuckoo. So Holland emphasized it again today with Bob. Any trade would have to be money in matched by the money going out.
Anytime you're an LTI, that's exactly where you're at. And obviously, what we did before the season started, I think on December 22nd, we signed Slater Cuckoo. And then in December, we also signed Dominic Cahoon. You know, so we've carried a 20, in effect, we're carrying a 29-man roster, not a 23-man roster. So people stay off the cap, and then we shuffle them back and forward. And then on April 12th, Monday, there's no longer a 23-man roster. You have to run your team within the cap. So obviously we've got to position ourselves so that we can get at our taxi squad players. So we'll try to, you know, put a list of players together. Basically, the roster that we have set on that afternoon or the next day is really our roster. And then from then on, we're allowed four regular recalls. But we've got to kind of there's no roster limit in terms of but you have to be cap compliant. And we think we can probably have, you know, 23, 24 players on the roster, and with enough money set aside to get at one at a player at a time in the on the taxi squad. So we're tight.
Yeah, they're very tight, and that's I feel bad sometimes because I feel like I shoot down most trade proposals. Well, actually, I don't feel like that. I do that, so I guess that's why I feel like that. And I feel a little bad sometimes because, you know, I don't want to let you down. You know, I love each and every one of you. You know, if I could do the show from your front yard and you could bring me lemonade, you know, I would do that. But it's just, I mean, if the Oilers are going to bring in a player, especially a marquee player, they got to send money out. And I get asked about Taylor Hall more often than I ever thought I would be asked about Taylor Hall, about anything. So he makes, his salary cap hit is $8 million. Now, maybe the Oilers are sniffing around. I mean, I'm sure at some point you ask just to see, but most of these players who are really appealing, we have a listener and he called in last night. He loves Rickard Rakell from the Ducks. I think he's really good too. The Oilers can't pay these people. So that is the challenge. If Ken Holland pulls something off, then credit to him, and he'll probably have done something really creative in the next 5 or 6 days. But just from what he explained, the money in, money out aspect to it doesn't work. Now, we know what the Oilers need, and this sort of ties into what I was talking about, the matchups with the other playoff-bound teams in the North. The Oilers could really use a third-line center, and they could really use a left winger who could play in the top six. And Stoff asked Holland, well, which one would be your preference?
Oh, I don't know. I think at the end of the day, Bob, you're talking about an upgrade. And, you know, upgrades are going to, our players are probably, they're making money. I mean, their cap number is going to be, it's not going to be $750 or $1 million. I mean, many right. of these players that we're talking about, that you know, a good portion of our bottom of our roster they make around $1 million. You know, $750 to $1.5 million thereabouts. So it's going to have to be a real legitimate. Our guys have done a great job. We're 28-2 the last 10 games. If you prorated that over 82 games, must be 110 point pace. Thereabouts. So we've played at a high level, and lots of these players that we're talking about have done a good job for us. And I think, you know, and maybe not it's one, but I think Dave Tippett's done a good job in moving them in and moving them out, and and the depth has really allowed us to kind of play, perform at that level. So to try to upgrade and bring in one player that's going to be better than those players, it's going to be, you have to factor in the assets and the cap space.
All right. So really what Ken Holland is saying is that why make a trade for another fourth line player? That's really what he's saying. No, I'm not. And again, he very well make a deal. Usually there's some sort of deal to be made at the trade deadline. And, you know, Bob and I were talking last week before one of the games. And if you have to move some money out, is Joachim Nygaard a player who could go somewhere else? And then maybe you get a player. But again, you're just getting a player that is sort of what you already have in your bottom six. And as Holland said, if the Oilers are to get a legitimate third line center or a top six left winger, those are upgrades. And those guys cost money, and the Oilers don't have that. So that's why he's positioning every that way, and why a lot of us are talking about it being extremely difficult here for the Oilers to add a significant piece. We got Fred on the CertainTeed hotline, 780-496-0063. Is this the Fred who has the homemade Stanley Cup?
Sure is, Reed. You should know that.
Well, sometimes there's another Fred that calls, but you're the most frequent Fred. Frequent Fred, maybe that'll be your nickname.
Frequent Fred, flying, whatever you want to call me.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the cup right now, actually, and it's not ready to come out quite yet. Let's put it that way. But there are some glaring needs on this hockey team, as we all know. And this year, you got a really good shot. You win your division. You got to win, what, one more round to go to the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, still four rounds of playoffs, same as always.
Yeah, but does it get any easier than this year? Like, you don't have to face a lot of the other teams, like, say, Colorado or whoever. Well, I guess you would have to. Or how does it work? Okay, you win your division, then what?
Yeah, then the four division winners are ranked 1 through 4 based on points. So there's right. No geographical concerns this year. The best surviving team will play the fourth best surviving team.
Okay. As far as Holland making any trades can be very difficult, but Taylor Hall, no, I don't think it's going to work. Well, Jack Eichel wants out of Buffalo. Can you get creative to somehow get Eichel out of Buffalo?
But that's my whole point, Fred. Like, you'd have to get really creative. And here's another thing to remember. Buffalo's asking for a first-round draft pick for Hall.
Yeah.
First-round draft picks are even more valuable than usual. And here's why. The salary cap is not going to increase next year. The salary cap might not increase for several years, as we know, because of the economic situation, because of the pandemic. So players on an entry-level contract make less than $1 million per season.
Yeah.
If you get a first-round player and he's ready to play maybe in the fall of 2022, and you got him on your NHL roster for 3 years making basically just a little over the league minimum, that's pretty valuable.
That is. And you know what? The Oilers don't have a second, third, or fourth.
Exactly.
That hurts big time. They're going to have to replenish the stock that way. But here's another point, Reed. The McDavid years are kind of flying by here. Next year, for sure, has to be the year. It has to be.
Well, I think they might be in a better position to add at the deadline next year. Fred, thanks for calling, buddy. Appreciate it. 780-496-0063. A little more from Ken Holland. We have Doug McLean coming up. It's Inside Sports on Chet. Appreciate you tuning in tonight. Oilers and Senators tomorrow. It starts at 3 in the afternoon. Gord Wilson from the Senators broadcast booth will join us later on tonight. Our hotline, sponsored by CertainTeed, 780-496-0063. Brian has decided to call in tonight. Hello, Brian. Go ahead.
Hello, hello there, Reed. Long time no talk.
Good to hear from you.
Question for you, or maybe an observation. Lately, we've heard some rumblings from, or complaints, rather than rumblings, you know, from some of the players in regards to the officiating and that. Now, last night, perfect example, and they were even talking about it on the TV. There was when the Oilers had one of their power plays, Connor was tripped up, and there was no call. And they were even commenting on how Shea Weber, who was guilty of the trip up, he even appeared to be calling for a penalty. You know,
well, like, he might have thought he was going to get one. I don't know if he was calling for it. That was an awful call, Brian. And Rob and I talked about it last night. And look, I'm in a position where I don't want to make everything I say about how the Oilers are hard done by the referees, because I don't believe that's the case. And I think the Oilers have benefited from plenty of bad calls this season as well. But I'll tell you about that play.
I'm not saying that it's just the Oilers.
Right. And that's the problem I have with that play is that is an obvious violation of the rules. He swung at the puck and missed and slashed the guy's feet out from under him. And they did not call the penalty because the Oilers already had a power play. I got to tell you what, Brian, I'm still from the school that if it's a 50-50 call to put a team down two men, I can understand the ref leaving his hand in his pocket as long as he's consistent. But on such an obvious violation of the rules, the referee should not manage the game. They should make the bloody call.
No, and that's exactly the issue. And I'm hoping that the general managers during the next meeting are going to, you know, maybe start making some screaming and howling about this. Because really, I mean, the NHL, and you and I have had this discussion in the past about how they've, you know, said over and over again, oh, we want to increase scoring. We want to increase scoring. Oh, scoring is down. Oh, how can we increase scoring? Well, then they brought in the second referee so that they can catch offenses that are behind the first referee. Well, obviously, that's not cutting the mustard. And the problem that I'm seeing is that, okay, you want parity in the league and everything. Okay, that's fine.
You got 30 seconds.
This is not the right way to get parity. And the problem that I see is by not calling the pet, if you want to sell the game, you're going to sell the superstars. Every sport knows that. And the bottom line is that if you're not calling the penalties, because let's face it, who's usually on the power play? It's the superstars.
Yeah. And you make a good point that, if, I mean, here's the thing, a referee can say, am I punishing the player who, you say, well, I didn't want to punish the player who committed the foul, but then you're punishing the star who made the good play by not making the call. That was a really bad call last night, for sure. Okay, 780-496-0063. More from Ken Holland, Doug McLean, former GM, coming up Inside Sports on Chet. Four minutes left in the second period. New Jersey and Buffalo tied at 3. About 3 minutes left in the second period. Capitals and Islanders still looking for the first goal of the game. Mid-second period, 2-2, Bruins and Flyers. Rangers up 4-1 on the Penguins, even though the shots on goal are 28-14 for Pitt. Also in the second, Panthers up 1-0 on the Hurricanes, and the Blue Jackets now ahead 2-0 of the Lightning. Roslovic has a goal in that one. Early second period, Detroit leading Nashville 1-0. No score about 12 minutes in between the Blackhawks and the Stars. Ducks and Sharks will start at 8:30 tonight. The Lakers taking it to the Raptors. It is 66-34 with 3 minutes left in the second quarter. 26-6, the Lakers outscoring the Raps in the second quarter. Oilers tomorrow against the Ottawa Senators. It is a 1:30 in the afternoon faceoff show with a 3:00 game start. Get it all here on 630 Chet. We just had Brian call in complaining about, justified complaints about the Shea Weber play on Connor McDavid and not enough penalty calls being made on violations against Stars. Dave Tippett was asked about that today.
It is frustrating to watch, and you know, especially McDavid, and it's just there's so many penalties on him that don't get called. But it is what it is. You just have to deal with it and move on.
Yeah, I don't know if the – I mean, we haven't really seen that mentality change in the NHL in the 47 years I've been alive, so I don't know if it's going to change overnight. I would just like to see obvious penalties called, and I don't care if it's committed against an Oiler or by an Oiler or by McBoogerton in the, you know, white court all-star game. If there's an obvious penalty, it should be called. And it should be called regardless of the time on the clock or the manpower situation. And I get it that I think referees, I mean, we say, well, they're managing the game. They're not calling the game. I think that's a little unfair to just say something that sort of all-encompassing. That's part of being a referee is managing the game and understand what is happening in the game. And knowing when you need to step in and knowing when you need to back off. But there are some situations where a trip is a trip. And Connor McDavid was obviously tripped by Shea Weber. And I don't care if it's 5-on-4, already 5-on-3, and you're giving a team another penalty or whatever. That should have been called. That specific play is to me the problem with the NHL. You know, I understand every game you watch, and Rob Brown says this all the time, there are always 50-50 calls where if you're not invested in the outcome of the game, so if you're not cheering for one of the two teams, you'll kind of be, well, it could have been a penalty, but okay, you know, ref probably didn't see it that way. You know, you decided not to disrupt the flow. And I'm fine with that. But just call the obvious penalties. Anyway. Ken Holland spoke earlier today on Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. You can listen to the full interview on our Oilers page on 630ched.com, by the way, but we're going through some of the highlights here. So the Oilers have a couple of significant players who will be unrestricted free agents in the offseason. So there is the chance that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Tyson Barry could leave the team through free agency, and the Oilers therefore would get nothing for those players. Now, we know that there have been talks going on, off and on, between Nugent Hopkins' camp and the Oilers. Tyson Barry, it doesn't really seem like much is happening there at the moment, and maybe they won't be able to bring him back. So Stauffer asked Holland, would you consider trading one of these impending unrestricted free agents before the deadline so you at least get something for them?
Traditionally, teams that are trying to win don't trade regular players off. I guess I would say to you, if we don't trade those players, that might be last year I spent assets in order to try to beef up last year's team. Maybe by not trading those players, you're spending assets to beef up this year's team. It's a totally different way of thinking about it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
Like certainly you could put those players, but we're trying to win. Like we're trying to, you know, we're trying to make the playoffs, and we're trying to win. We're trying to go on a playoff run. So, you know, to trade somebody that's a regular on our team to go get, you know, a draft pick and a prospect that might impact the team 3, 4, 5 years from now, so that you can win 5 years. We're trying to win now. We're trying to win now. So I don't see that happening.
I don't see that happening. So that's where he got to after all that. So Barry Nugent Hopkins are sticking around, which I think we all knew, but we got the clarification from the general manager. Let's just talk about one more player here. His name's Mike Smith. He's 13-3-2 on the season. He has a .919 save percentage. And he has a 2.41 goals against average. All very good, if not downright excellent. Mike Smith turned 39 on March 22nd. His contract expires after this season. Now, if it just wasn't for that age thing, I don't think there would be any doubt that you bring back this goaltender. I don't think there would be any doubt. It's just the 3 followed by the 9 next to the H. But if he keeps playing like this, and look, I realize that he took a little bit of criticism for the overtime goal last night, but those really haven't been going in on him this season. Pretty infrequent that he allows a goal like that. And if not for Smith, it's probably not in overtime because the Oilers were pretty badly outplayed, especially in the first period. The shots were 15-5. So Bob asked Holland, would you re-sign a Mike Smith who's going to be 40 years old by the end of next season?
You know, I had Chris Chelios till he was 47 years of age in Detroit. I think I had Hasek till he was 43. I had multiple players into their 40s, Igor Larionov, Steve Yzerman. I had lots of players up into their high 30s. Chris Osgood at 38, the Drapers to their high 30s. And we did a lot of winning. We did a lot of winning. I'm not scared of age. I don't look at age. I look at how you play. And, you know, he keeps going what he's going. Well, why wouldn't we want to do it again? I mean, he's playing at a high level.
Well, I think there's the answer. I think if Mike Smith wants to come back, Ken Holland would be happy to have him back. All right, you can reach out at 780-496-0063. We'll get some tales of the trade deadline from Doug McLean next. All right, pleased to welcome back to the show former NHL head coach and general manager Doug McLean. Doug, good to have you on, man. How are you doing?
Well, I'm grinding it out here in South Florida. It's not, you know, it's not bad. It's a little cool today. It's in the low 70s, so it's, you know, hopefully it'll warm up as the day goes on.
See, I still can't convert Fahrenheit to Celsius in my head. I'll take your word for it as someone, I mean, you've lived all over Canada.
Okay, it's 28 then. How's that?
Okay, see, yeah. If you think it's warm and you've been through some winters in various parts of the continent, so I'll take your word for it when you say that that's a good temperature. So what's the worst maritime, what's the worst PEI winter you ever experienced?
Oh my God, there was some, it was always great winters there, you know, because we used to determine it by how many times the car went off the road going home. I lived about 20 miles out of town when I was teaching school there. And if the car went off the road, that, you know, it was half a dozen times a winter we'd slide off the road or couldn't, or go off by how many times we got our lane plowed. So there was some bad winters, but they were great winners. You never notice it. When I was a school teacher and they'd cancel school, it was like music to my ears. I didn't have to get up and go, you know? So we had great winners in PEI.
You're like some of the kids, happy to get a day off school. That's pretty good. Hey,
teachers are worse. Teachers are worse than the kids ever dreamt of being.
That's great. It's good to catch up with you. I always enjoy our chats. Before we dive into some of the hockey stuff, let everybody know what you're up to these days, because you're still keeping pretty busy.
Well, yeah, we've been in Florida all winter, but I'm doing a podcast with Nick Kyprios 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday on YouTube TV. And we've had a ball doing it. So it's kind of fun, and it's starting to take off. We're getting some really solid numbers and having fun with it. So that's all. And, you know, I'm playing a lot of golf, and I've got some real estate stuff going on in PEI that keeps me a little bit busy. But overall, I'm kind of enjoying retirement, to be quite honest. I seem to be busy, but it's general main. I play golf tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. I have pickleball at 4 o'clock. Then I've got to go to dinner with friends. So I got a damn full pack schedule is what I'm saying.
You're a multi-sport athlete now.
I'm a multi-sport person, not an athlete. So
that's awesome.
So it's good.
Right on. Well, good to catch up with you. I always enjoy talking to you around this time of year. We usually speak about the trade deadline, something you went through as a general manager. I know it would have been stressful and probably busy. Did you enjoy the process of the trade deadline? Were you just trying not to drown? What was it like when you
It was different because I was an expansion GM, so it was a little bit different than an established team. You know, the established teams today are really wired to improve their team and to get better and have a chance to, you know, extend their season in the playoffs. And whereas an expansion team, it's much like the bottom feeders today. I mean, you're typically a seller trying to, to sell guys that were unrestricted free agents or overpriced guys, or, you know, try to get assets back and draft picks and younger players. So it was sort of a different thing, but it was really, it was an exhilarating time, even though we weren't looking to make the big move like maybe the Oilers or the Leafs or Montreal or, you know, the top teams in the league. But we certainly were trying to improve the team, and it was always a ball. You know, you'd spend the week or so before, or actually the month before, you'd have your scouts out on the road, really following the free agents and following who could be available. And then you'd bring your staff together into Columbus for the 3 or 4 days. And we'd spend a lot of time together going through our lists and priorities. It was very similar to July 1st, to be quite honest, but it was always intense, especially when you get to 10-3. I'll never forget 10-3 of the deadline. I've got Jeff Sanderson. He was making really good money. And I thought, geez, I'd like to move Jeff. So I did a deal with Berkey to move him to Vancouver for a third round pick. And it saved my owner $800,000. So he was doing hands, he was always 78 at the time. He wasn't doing handstands, but he was excited. So the problem with the deal is Berkey said, look, I want Sanderson for the playoffs, but I don't want to be stuck with his $4 million salary next year. So Berkey and I did a deal. Okay, I save $800,000 by moving to you now. He plays the playoffs for you. And next September, after training camp, you put him on waivers. If he passes through, I will pick him up the second time you put him on waivers. In other words, you put him on waivers. If I don't, you keep him. And then the next time you put him on waivers, we try it again, and then I'll pick him up. So I'm telling Sandy that I'm trading him to Vancouver. And I couldn't tell him that I was getting him back in all likelihood, and sort of saying, you may not want to sell your house. And, oh my God, it was a shit, it was an awful situation. So, so Sandy ends up back with us. And then a couple of weeks later, I actually traded him to Phoenix for Jason Chimera and Cale Holson. I don't know who else, another kid that actually won a cup from Mike Rupp. So, it was a good deal. Sandy got to go to Arizona where he finished his career. So it worked out okay, but I didn't feel very good about trading them there, knowing that I was getting them back and couldn't tell them, So we had lots of fun at the trade deadline. So it's good.
Yeah, wow, that's quite a maneuver for sure. So I'm wondering, deals are probably going to start happening in the next few days. The deadline's on Monday. When a deal actually finally happens, how long will those two GMs have been talking about that deal? I assume they don't wake up on Monday, April 12th and be like, well, I'm going to call Jimmy and make him this offer. How long do these percolate before they finally say, okay, we're both comfortable?
Probably a couple of weeks before you start to, the check around, and it would be very preliminary talks. Like, you'd phone a team that has, that are sellers. So let's say, David Savard. First of all, you may get Columbus if they're looking to move Savard, because, it's been out there for a month or two that they probably aren't going to re-sign Savard because they need the money to go to Walensky and Jones down the road. So and he's not going to re-sign there because he wants to move on. So that player is probably in play. So if you're a team that's really in need of a defenseman like a Savard, which would be a Winnipeg, which might be an Edmonton, which would be a Montreal, which would be a Florida. There's a numerous, maybe Toronto, numerous teams looking for a shutdown type defenseman. So you may have started that conversation a month ago, but it really would pick up a week before, where you'll circle back and say, okay, what's going on with Savard? Are you a seller now for sure? And is he going to be available? So, then it really intensifies the last few days. So I'm thinking right now, the GMs would be extremely busy working it, because we're in the last week essentially before the deadline. So it really picks up intensity and really get into more serious conversations. Some deals don't happen till right at the deadline. I remember Ray Whitney, I had Ray Whitney who's going to be an unrestricted free agent, and Toronto kept, Bill Waters drove me crazy, phoning me, offering me Ponik Porosky, who at that time was a young guy. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I will keep Ray Whitney and he'll stay with me the rest of the year, and he can walk for nothing before I'll trade him to you for Ponikarowski. So that deal didn't happen, you know, and then Ray ended up going as a free agent at the end of the year. But, you know, it really intensifies as the days get closer. So, but it's still like, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of stress on the GM, but it is a lot of fun.
Doug McLean joining us on Inside Sports, former NHL general manager and head coach, as we get ready for the NHL trade deadline on Monday. Yeah, I love those stories and some of the experiences you had for sure. This year is an interesting one because we don't have cross-divisional play, so we kind of got four little leagues going on. We got COVID, we got an international border, and all that kind of stuff. We have the Oilers sitting here with a couple of outstanding players. I would say three guys with Nurse, Barry, and Smith who are having excellent seasons, quite frankly. And then, you know, they're trying to fill out the roster. Like if you're Ken Holland, are you desperate to do that now? Do you need to wait another year when there's cap space? Because Ken has said it has to be money in, money out if they're making a deal. And to me, that rules out guys making anything over north of $2 or $3 million.
Yeah, it really is challenging for Ken because he, you know, he's got the Nugent Hopkins situation sitting there, who's an unrestricted free agent, who I've got to believe there's a ton of conversation going on to get him redone so that he doesn't walk out the door for nothing. So if Ken doesn't move him, which there's not a chance he's going to move him, but this is an unbelievable asset. If he doesn't move Nugent Hopkins, he definitely has to get him on a deal for next year. And the groundwork has got to be laid for that deal. You know, with a Barry, he's an unrestricted free agent. He's going to be looking for a substantial raise. He took a haircut to go there last year. So Ken can't move him simply because he needs him if he's going to, you know, with a playoff run here. The same with Nugent Hopkins. So it's really, you're caught here with two real good unrestricted free agents who you could end up losing. We saw it in Columbus when Panarin and Bobrovsky and Duchesne walked out the door at the end of the year and they got nothing for them. This is a situation where both these guys could walk out the door for nothing, but I've got to believe Ken's going to do everything he can to get Barry and Nugent Hopkins done. I also heard yesterday that they're in on the guy from Buffalo that everybody wants, Taylor Hall. I mean, I'm thinking, how is that going to work? How can Taylor Hall go there on a deal? And the guy told me that they're looking at a deal that would have them both done for less than $12 million for both of them. And, you know, it would work next year. I'm not sure how it worked, although Taylor's not owed a lot of money right now for the rest of this year. So, you know, that's the complication here of potential of losing guys for nothing. You need them for your cup, you know, for your playoff run. And you got to try to make sure you get them back next year if, in fact, you want them. And I've got to believe he wants those two guys in particular back. So, you know, Nurse, he's a restricted free agent, right? Nurse is.
Oh, he's got another year. He's still got another year out.
Yeah, so he's not a factor. You just got to make sure you've got the space when Nurse comes available down the road. And, you know, that's going to cost him a lot of money with the way he's performed this year. So that's just a long-range plan. It's more pressing to deal with the Barry Nugent Hopkins situation right now. And anybody else they want to bring in to try to give them a chance to beat the Leafs or Winnipeg or whoever they're going to play.
Okay, so you're hearing that the Oilers are sniffing around for a way to make a Hall trade work.
Well, I heard that yesterday, and it was a reasonable source that said it. And I mean, I said that doesn't make sense to me. But we know how long they've been talking about the right guy, the thinness on their wings. But Yarvie's helped that this year. Nugent Hopkins moves there; that's helped. But they still could use another top winger, you know, in their group. I mean, in their top six. So we'll see if there's anything to it. But as they say in PEI, I'm not telling you it's the truth. I'm just telling you what I heard.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that, Doug. I always appreciate checking in with you. You have great insight and always a great tale or two from your career. Hope the golf course is good to you, buddy. And let's keep in touch.
Okay, man. Anytime.
And sorry, let people know where to find that podcast again.
Real Kipper at Noon on YouTube TV, or it's on any podcast, Spotify, Apple, shortly after it's up. But Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 12 to 1. A lot of fun.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.